These are our men. Parker Watch Company and its dealers throughout America dedicate this program to the United States Treasury Department for the sale of war bonds. With Miriam Hopkins as our special guest today, we proudly present another in this series of dramatic programs, These Are Our Men. Fight for total victory. These are our men. Eisenhower, Arnold, Marshall, Nimitz, Wainwright, Halsey, Clark, Bradley, Kincaid. Today we give you
Lieutenant General George S. Patton, Jr., Commanding General of the Third Army.
Our story will begin in just a moment, but first, here's our star Treasury salesman, special guest today, the distinguished actress of stage and screen, Miss Miriam Hopkins.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I know right now you want to hear the thrilling story of one of America's most colorful generals, and a red-blooded story it is, too. But I'll be back later in the program with an important message from another colorful figure. Uncle Sam.
That's a promise, Miss Hopkins. Meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, may I remind you to be sure to send for your copy of our exciting new book portfolio, combining the pictures and stories of America's top leaders, with a special compartment for the safekeeping of your war bonds. I'll tell you how in just 27 minutes. Right now, the authentic story of another great American. It was during the first week of the Allied invasion of Normandy, the week beginning June 6th. I'm sure you remember that date. After the reports had started coming in that the beachhead was at last established and the troops were pushing further in, the armchair strategists all over America began to ask the question which was uppermost in their minds.
Where is Patton?
Yeah, where is Patton?
Where is Patton? No one knew. No one volunteered the information, but everyone speculated.
I'll tell you where Patton is. He's in Italy.
Impossible. He must be somewhere in Washington. Oh, Patton's through. Finished.
Not on your life. He's too good a man. He's probably in England right now, making preparations.
Well, it's a mystery. That's all I've got to say. The biggest mystery of the war.
And even among the men in the ranks, among Army and Navy officers, truck drivers, and assault troops, the same question was being asked.
Where's Patton? That's what I'd like to know. When old Blood and Guts gets here, that's when we'll start moving.
And perhaps not too surprisingly, during this same time, there was just as much concern in Nazi quarters as to Patton's whereabouts.
Here's the latest intelligence report, Major.
Good.
Their First Army is massing for assault at this point here.
Mm-hmm.
These are their tanks, artillery, and supplies. Reserves are approximately at this location here, 2 miles inland.
Mm-hmm. Very good. By the way, Captain, still no news of Patton, I presume?
Unfortunately not, Herr Major.
That is too bad. All these intelligence reports are totally worthless unless we know where Patton is. You may tell that to Colonel von Gerhardt for me.
Yeah, what, Herr Major? A very unpleasant individual, this Patton. A gangster. Typical of their American culture.
But also their most dangerous general, Captain Welser. Remember that. Unless we know where he is and when he's going to land, no plans for attack or defense are possible.
On D-Day Plus, the mystery was finally solved. On D-Day Plus, somewhere on the beaches of Normandy, Third Army tanks began rolling ashore. And the news spread like wildfire among the invasion troops.
It's not. That's old man Patton himself.
Where?
What'd he say?
Oh,
Yes.
Boy, is he a tough-looking baby. I heard them say
what...
Hey,
off. He's going to make a speech, I think.
All right, men. Now let's cut the guts out of these krauts and get the bloody blazes to Berlin. And when we get to Berlin, I'm personally going to shoot the bloody eyes out of that paper-hanging snake who calls himself Hitler.
Who is Patton, and how did he get that way? Well, just follow us through the pages of history as we pick out the salient facts in the general's career, the highlights and the low points, the apocryphal stories and the documented truth. What does old history say? Now listen.
George S. Patton, Jr., born 1885 on his father's ranch in San Gabriel, California. Childhood, uneventful. In school, achieved reputation of being poor student and good sailor.
Continue.
Incident which follows is somewhat apocryphal.
Well, that's all right. We understand. Remember, this is Patton we're dealing with, a legendary character.
Very well. Scene, the principal's office. Time, 1900. Characters, the principal and George Patton, age 15. Subject, George Patton.
You sent for me, Mr. Studebaker?
Yes, George, I did. I have before me a report from your algebra teacher.
Oh.
You are, I presume, aware of its contents?
I think so, sir.
Well, what have you to say about the matter, George?
Well, I was, that is, you see, it was this way. I was busy, sir.
Busy?
Yes, sir, very busy.
Too busy to take your algebra examination?
Well, I couldn't very well, yes, sir.
And what were you busy with, if one may ask?
Winning a race, sir.
A race? What kind of a race?
A sailboat race. I won the championship. First
Very interesting, I'm sure. I take it that you're quite fond of boat racing.
Yes, sir.
Fonder, shall we say, than of algebra?
Why, sure.
Good. Well, in that case, for the remainder of the semester, you are going to do your racing right here.
Huh?
You will stay after school and erase all the blackboards.
Too early to tell about Patton's character? Perhaps. But soon the boy who ignored algebra examinations and won sailboat races turned into man. And as he grew, so did his interests change and his ambitions begin to crystallize. Let's turn to history again.
From Pasadena High School, George Patton went to the Virginia Military Institute, then got his appointment to West Point. At West Point, Patton achieved reputation of being outstanding athlete.
Anything else?
He also achieved reputation of having more push than any other cadet.
Push?
Yes, push. Cockiness, self-assurance. Call it what you like. Scene, West Point campus. Time, 1905. Characters, Patton and other cadets. Subject, Patton.
Hello, Patton.
Hello, Jackson.
Say, that was quite a show you put up yesterday, fella. Darn nice tackling.
Yeah, I know. I stopped him cold, didn't I?
Same scene, same characters, 6 months later.
Congratulations, Patton. Heard you won the shooting match.
Ah, nothing to it. I could have won that match with my eyes closed, my hands tied behind my back.
Oh, come on, Patton. You're not that
good. The heck I'm not. I'm the best shot in West Point, maybe in the whole army.
Same scene, same characters, the year 1908.
Hiya, Patton.
Hiya, Jackson.
Well, finals are almost here.
Yep.
How do you think you're going to make out?
Duck soup. When I get through, I'm going to be class adjutant.
Now, wait a minute, Patton. For 4 years, I've been listening to your bragging about your shooting, your football, your fencing and maneuvers, and your endurance and guts and stamina, and a million other things. But don't tell me about scholarships. That's one thing I'm not going to swallow. In order to get to be class adjutant, you got to be top in your class. And you haven't hit the books once since I've known you.
So what? Studies are like everything else. You grab them by the nose, you kick them in the tail. I'm going to crack that examination wide open. If necessary, I'm going to memorize every book in the Point Library. My mind's made up, Jackson. I'm going to be class adjutant, or I'll know the reason why.
Hey, Pat.
Yeah?
Well, I gotta hand it to you.
Oh, you mean class adjutant?
Yeah.
Oh, I was duck soup. Nothing to it. Let me tell you something, Jackson.
Huh?
When I get through, I'm gonna be the top general in the Army.
Oh.
Yes, the legend was beginning to grow. The legend of a man who knew what he wanted and went out and got it, whether it was there or not. 3 years out of West Point, he was again proving his ability by representing the United States in the Olympic Games in Stockholm. History?
At the Olympic Games in 1912, George Patton set a new world's record in target shooting and took third honors in the pentathlon. Then, 4 years later...
Scene, the corridor outside of General Pershing's office in Washington, D.C. Time, 1916. Character, Lieutenant Patton, camped on a footstool.
Nuts.
Time goes by. 10 minutes, 15, a half hour, 2 hours. Finally, a door opens.
Oh, General, I... Oh, it's you, Jackson.
Are you still sitting there, Patton?
Yeah, I'm still sitting there. So what? Got any objections?
As far as I'm concerned, you can sit here until doomsday. The general just won't let you go.
Oh, no, you watch me. Never take no for an answer. That's me. When they say no, just
grab him. I know, that grab him by the nose stuff. But listen, Patton, believe me. I've been with you in West Point, and I'm on your side. And I'm giving to you straight. You're just making yourself look silly.
Yeah?
Sure. How many times has he said no to you?
14.
There, you see, that proves it.
Proves nothing. I know what I want to do, and I'm going to do it.
Never give up, do you?
Now, look. I'm going to Mexico if I have to crawl to do it. I'm going to get into action if I have to tear down the building to do it. So that's that.
All right, Patton. Have it your own way.
Another half hour goes by. An hour. 2 hours. 3 hours. 4. Finally, a door opens.
Oh, General Pershing.
Huh? Oh, Patton. You still here?
General, I must talk to you. You got to listen to me, General.
Haven't I told you not to bother
But, General,
me?
You got to give me a chance. I deserve it. I mean, it isn't fair to keep me here in Washington while there's action going on in Mexico. I'm too good a man, the best shot in the Army. All I ask is you take me along. I promise you won't be sorry, General.
Patton.
Yes, sir.
If I take you along, will you promise me something?
Why, sure. Anything, General Pershing.
Leave this blasted footstool here in Washington. And one thing more, Patton.
Yes, sir?
When you get there, remember... Grab him by the nose and kick him in the tail.
Our history continues.
We seem to have left something out, Mr. Cutsworth.
Yeah, what's that?
Mrs. Patton, of course.
Oh, yes.
Patton married Beatrice Eyre in 1911, 2 years out of West Point. They have two daughters, both married, and one son. Mrs. Patton is a model officer's wife and regards the general with a tolerance and good humor born of years of experience.
Mrs. Patton also has other attributes. She is a gentle, charming woman, a novelist by profession, a sailboat enthusiast, and honestly regards her husband as a gentle, kind-hearted man. If that last tempts you to smile, well, listen, the story isn't over yet. Another look at history.
In 1917, Patton was sent to France as an aide to General Pershing and ordered to establish the first U.S. Army tank school at Langres. He saw action in San Miguel and was awarded the DSC for participating in the offensive at Air.
Those are the bare facts, the official record. Actually, what happened to Patton in France, or should we say, what Patton made happen in France, was much more dramatic, much more in keeping with the legend of old blood and guts. Near Chepy, September 26, 1918, hell had temporarily come to earth. German artillery shells were plowing up the ground. German rifle and machine gun bullets were whining overhead. And in the midst of all this fury stood an American tank officer directing the advance of his tank brigade.
Come on, get going. Go forward, you alligators. Get the light out. Faster, faster. Hey, what the devil is that?
Hold it, Sergeant. Get me. Who are these men coming this way? Where are they coming from?
I don't know, sir.
Hey, you guys, where do you think you're going? You there, come here.
Yes, sir.
What's the meaning of this? Where the devil do you guys think you're going? If you're in the infantry, you're supposed to go forward, not backward.
Yes, but you see, sir, we couldn't...
Where's your commanding officer?
He's dead, sir.
I see.
We couldn't stop him.
We didn't know what to do. The whole force is disorganized.
Well, you're going to get organized right now. Sergeant, you take over the tanks.
All right, men. Follow me.
Yes, sir.
Come on, get moving. We'll show those hotties what real fighting is. Now remember, your own fire reduces the effectiveness of the enemy fire. Now let's get at these clouts now. Grab them by the nose and kick them in a tear.
Disorganized infantry force became a highly organized unit, advancing behind Patton under heavy machine gun fire. And just as the men were ready to attack, a shell came screaming down.
All the bloody luck.
Let me help you, sir.
Never mind me. You guys go ahead. Go ahead. Forward! Attack! Company B, take that position over here.
Yes, sir.
Company A. Company B. I'll get a move on. Get the ladder. Get those crowds and rip them wide open.
Badly wounded, Patton still continued directing operations of the unit until all arrangements for turning over the command were complete.
Okay, Colonel. How do you feel, sir?
All right, fine.
All right, gang. Pretty bad. Don't you worry, Colonel. We'll have you fixed up in no time.
How did we make out?
Oh, we pushed them back right down the valley.
Oh, we did, huh?
Yes, sir. A major victory, sir.
Good, fine. Well, all right. Get me fixed up and make it snappy. What do you think I want to do, spend the rest of the war in a hospital?
Yes, that's only one of the many stories in the saga of old blood and guts. Patton came back from France, ready and eager to go into tanks. Instead, he was told,
Patton, you're going back to horses.
And so, back to horses he went. Did that keep Patton down? If you think so, you still haven't learned your history. Tanks were now Patton's baby, and tank warfare became his business and his hobby, to both of which he devoted all his spare time and all his energy. About this phase of Patton's career, history says... History?
Huh? Excuse me. After
World War I, Patton became an advocate of armored forces and an expert in tank warfare. But it wasn't until 21 years later that he had a chance to demonstrate that he was a brilliant strategist and one of the finest tacticians in all military history.
Yes, June 1940 was really the beginning of the modern phase of Patton's career. He had been ordered to duty with the 2nd Armored Division at Fort Benning as tank brigade commander. When he arrived on the scene, the fur began to fly.
Hey, Titus, what's the meaning of this? Is this a tank camp or an old lady's home?
Well, sir, you see, we didn't have time to prepare. And besides, sir, well, to put it bluntly, the division is suffocating in red tape.
Oh, it is it? Well, we'll put a stop to it right now. Fine state of affairs. I'm supposed to train an army here, and I've got nothing to train them with.
Yes, sir.
Don't yes me.
No, sir.
No barracks, no tanks, no equipment. Titus, call Washington. Tell him I want barracks directed for these men. I want them here by the end of the week.
But that's impossible, sir. The material...
Don't stand there and contradict me. I want them by the end of the week.
Yes, sir.
And when you're through with that, get all the tanks out and have them repaired by tomorrow morning.
But that's just it, sir. There's no equipment to repair them with. We're trying to get the authorization.
Never mind the authorization. Get the equipment at Sears Roebuck.
That's against regulations.
Blast the regulations. I'll take the responsibility. We'll tell Washington it's a new source of supply.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to get some discipline out of this confusion.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to make this the best bloody armored division in the whole dang army.
Yes, sir.
Well, no other reason why.
Patton made good on his promise. By the fall of 1941, the 2nd Armored Division was the toughest, most feared, and admired outfit in the whole army, with Patton always in the forefront, always urging his men on with a now famous slogan.
All right, come on, you guys, give it to them, grab them by the nose, and kick them in the tail.
And then came North Africa.
Go forward! Always go forward! You must not fail! Go until the last shots have been fired, and the last drop of gasoline is gone!
Then go forward on foot.
And go forward they did. He chased Rommel out of Tunisia and chased the Nazis out of Sicily. All the way to Rome, Patton chased the Nazis. And then, suddenly, he disappeared. And on June 11th, 1944, the German radio was heard saying,
"The main blow cannot be struck until we see where Patton will land."
They found out soon enough. They found out when his armored columns chased them to Brest. And they knew for sure when he stormed the city of Metz by frontal assault. Today, they wish they had never heard of him. Thus, history has reached out and embraced George Patton, just as he always knew it would. But who is the man behind the legend? Even history has not supplied us with an answer to that question. So make your choice right now. Is it the man who leads his men to battle, saying,
"Attack ruthlessly, rapidly, viciously, and without rest. Remember, a pint of sweat will save a gallon of blood."
Or the man who sent out Christmas cards inscribed,
"Almighty, most merciful Father, we humbly beseech thee to restrain these immoderate reigns with which we have had to contend. Graciously hearken to us as soldiers who call upon thee, that armed with thy power, we may advance from victory to victory and crush the oppression and wickedness of our enemies."
Is it the man who implores his men with elegant oaths?
"Grip the crowd belly buttons up one hill and down the other."
Or the man who wrote this poem set to music.
"From pride and foolish confidence, from every weakening creed, from the dread fear of fearing, protect us, Lord, and lead. For slaves who shun the issue, we do not ask thy aid. To thee we trust our spirits, our bodies unafraid. From doubt and fearsome boding, still thou our spirits guard. Make strong our souls to conquer. Give us victory, O Lord."
If the picture is still unclear, remember, these incidents, these words and anecdotes are all legends colored by time, by telling and by retelling. But here's one story that needs no embellishment. It came out of El Guitar and was carried on the wires of all the press associations. It said, "El Guitar, December 12th. Today, Captain Richard Jensen, an aide to General George Patton, was killed in action. Immediately after the burial, General Patton called in the correspondents and paid tribute to the soldiers."
"Gentlemen, Captain Richard Jensen was one of a family that had been friends of my family for three generations. His father, now dead, was a retired commander in the Navy. Captain Jensen had volunteered to go to the front as an additional officer in our tank force on Gaby's Road. When the Stukas came over, he was standing only a few feet away from me. We dived into a slit trench, but Captain Jensen was hit. Killed instantly by concussion. I have just come from his funeral. He was one of the bravest men in our outfit. He died courageously. I'm acting like an old fool."
The toughest, fightingest, cussingest soldier in the whole army stood up, mopped at his eyes with a khaki handkerchief, and wept.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stotz Cotsworth, for another nice job of narration, and you, Lawson Zerbe, for your fine portrayal of Lieutenant General Patton. Ladies and gentlemen, here's our guest again, the charming star of stage and screen, Miss Miriam Hopkins.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the Treasury Department has asked me to come here today to give you reasons for buying war bonds and keeping them, to make a plea that you invest your extra dollars in the world's safest and best investment, to make an appeal to back up our fighting men with the equipment which they need. But frankly, I can't get myself to do it. I'm just an average woman with no magic power of persuasion, no secret formula which produces miracles and makes men see the things they won't see. What reason shall I give you? What kind of plea? We all read the papers. We've all seen the dispatches from the front. Among them, the story of the men in Belgium who were surrounded by the Nazis, and who, when asked to surrender, replied, nuts. What reason did those men have to fight in the face of tremendous odds against them? And who made the appeal that they should do it? What reasons prompted the 6 barefoot Americans on the island of Luzon to preserve the regimental flag of the gallant 26th Cavalry and keep it hidden and off the ground for 3 years of Japanese occupation? And who made the appeal that they should do it? What reasons made our fighting men today give up their lives in battle? And do they wait for an appeal before they do it? We all know the answers to these questions. We all know what reasons these men have, and that no appeal, no plea was necessary to make them fight and die for freedom. Well, if appeals are not necessary for them, why should they be necessary for us? Why must we be cajoled and flattered and high-pressured into buying and keeping war bonds when we know, or we should know, that they spell the difference between life and death to our fighting men? That our little sacrifices are but a drop in the sea as compared with the sacrifices of any soldier on any fighting front? No, we need no appeals and we need no pleas. I'm confident we only need to know the truth, to look within ourselves and ask ourselves one question. Will we be able to face these men when they come back? Will we be able to look upon the extra crosses in the cemeteries and say, I've done my job also? Thank you.
Thank you, Miss Miriam Hopkins. These are our men, featuring today the dramatized story of Lieutenant General George Patton, Jr., with Miriam Hopkins as our special guest, is presented each Saturday by the Parker Watch Company and its dealers throughout America, but not to sell watches. What we ask you to buy is bonds, war bonds, more bonds. And here's the news about the book portfolios I promised you. Right now, the Parker Watch Company is distributing to its friends and listeners a wonderful booklet in brilliant colors containing the pictures and biographies of all the great American war leaders being dramatized on this series of programs. And in combination with this booklet, there's a portfolio for the safekeeping of your war bonds, as well as a handy chart for recording the serial numbers of your bonds. These book portfolios are available to all who want them. And here's how you can get your copy. Simply send us the mailing and wrapping cost of 10 cents and address your request to the Parker Watch Company, Post Office Box 14, New York 19, New York. Do it today, right after this program. Just write your name and address on a piece of paper, put it in an envelope, enclose 10 cents in coin only, and mail it to the Parker Watch Company, Post Office Box 14, New York 19, New York. Next week, These Are Our Men will bring you the first radio presentation of Ernie Pyle's bestseller, Brave Men. And our guest star will be the famous baritone of concert and radio, Robert Merrill. So be sure to tune in, same time and station. The music for today's program was composed and conducted by Joseph Chernyovsky, and the entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leder. These Are Our Men is recorded by the Office of War Information for shortwave rebroadcast to foreign countries. Don't forget now, for your copy of our new combination book portfolio entitled These Are Our Men, send 10 cents in coin only to the Parker Watch Company, Post Office Box 14, New York 19, New York. This is Jack Costello speaking.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.